Small details or big surfaces, tight corners or odd shapes, flat, rounded, textured, or tall. Whatever your next project, there's a spray paint pattern that's just right. Because Rust-Oleum's new Custom Spray 5-in-1 gives you control with 5 different spray patterns. So you can tackle nooks, crannies, edges, and curves without worrying about drips, runs, uneven coverage, or anything else. Custom Spray 5-in-1. Only from Rust-Oleum.
Normally, being a little extra might be a bit much, but not when it comes to healthcare. That's why UnitedHealthcare's Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, supplement your primary plan so you manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
Yo, technology, what is it all about?
The CEO's accountable for how they treat their workers. So when I say 1, 2, 3, you say solidarity. 1, 2, 3.
Solidarity.
1, 2, 3.
Solidarity.
1, 2, 3.
Hello and welcome to Danny in the Valley. Thank you for tuning in. It has been a busy, busy week and we have a great show for you. But before we get to the main interview, which I think you're really going to enjoy, a couple things. One, I don't know if you heard, but Uber, little ride-hailing company, they're going public. Yeah, so just over 10 years after Travis Kalanick founded the company as a black car service, it is an empire. Now it's making huge, astoundingly large losses, and it's not clear how they're ever going to turn a profit. But it is an empire. Last year, they passed 10 billion rides. And so when the company goes public, a lot of those workers will become millionaires overnight. And it also meant a few billionaires, Kalanick among them. And in case you didn't know, San Francisco is already the most expensive city in America. So things are about to get even crazier. As you might expect, not everybody is happy about this. And last week, I went down to Uber's headquarters to see for myself because there was a pretty big protest there. So demonstrators closed down Market Street, which is the busiest street in the city, to protest unfair labor practices, or what they claim are unfair labor practices, terrible wages, and really the rise or solidification of the gig economy.
We are the drivers too. A little bit louder. Three. We want justice for the people.
I spoke to one of the drivers. His name is Jeff Perry. He's a burly guy. He had a beard, long blonde hair, and he had a little Gig Workers Rising sticker on his t-shirt. And he was out there because he says, just since the turn of the year, as Uber began to really gear up for this big share offering, they started slashing driver payouts over and over and over.
And when they changed the rates, you know, it's like, it's not, hey, in 30 days, look for this, right? You go to sign on to your app one day, and it says you must agree to this before you can work, okay? And you either agree at that moment, or you're out of your job immediately.
And how often does it happen where they do change those rates?
Oh, it's all the time. I mean, just since Christmas, it's like, I've had to click maybe 4 or 5 times.
And every time it goes down?
Every time it goes down. It's always down. They have not increased one, not a single time in the 3+ years I've been a driver. Never. It has never gone up.
So what is it now compared to when you started?
Less than half. It's less than half of what I made when I first started driving for them.
So what do you think you're making on an hourly basis now?
Making after expenses, we're talking $6-7 an hour.
How do you feel as a driver? How do you feel Uber views you? Or Uber or Lyft? I think you do. You drive for both?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I am 100% disposable garbage to both of them.
Disposable garbage. That kind of statement just stuck with me. But what is certainly true is that all these tech companies that are going public at the moment, there's really a growing tension about the wealth that they are generating for their employees. While these armies of contractors that work for them, but aren't full employees, and the cities in which they live, who aren't sharing in all of that wealth, it really is starting to create a real friction. And it feels like it's just getting worse. So I'm not really sure where it's going to go, but it's definitely something that it's palpable. and we're definitely going to keep writing about and reporting on. So we'll be keeping an eye, and I'm sure in the coming weeks we'll be talking more about it and maybe having some folks on to talk about it further. But I digress, because we have a fantastic interview for you this week. As I mentioned, I was in LA recently this month at the Milken Conference. And while I was there, I did a bunch of interviews, and among them was Dan Buettner, who is truly a fascinating guy. So one, he holds a few world records for cycling, transcontinental cycling, including riding a bike across the Sahara Desert. But that's not why I wanted to talk to him. He has also studied, this is his job, is he's studied the places on Earth that are home to the longest living populations of humans, and basically figured out what they all have in common. Now, as regular listeners will know, we have covered lots of this stuff around longevity. And it usually involves these kind of off-the-wall ideas and science and really like kind of bleeding-edge stuff. But Buettner's approach is totally different. He basically studied these populations that are full of, you know, people living into their hundreds, etc., and just figured out what they're doing. By basically boiling that down, we can kind of mimic some of their habits and not doing anything terribly revolutionary, no magic pills, no blood boys. You can probably live comfortably and healthily into your 90s. It's just about beans, sleep, and friends. I know that sounds weird, but that's actually kind of true. You will see. Anyhow, I will let him explain. So, without further ado, I give you Dan Buettner.
Live from the Beverly Hilton in Los Angeles, California.
In a really depressing little room.
Danny and Danny show.
Cool, we're cooking, we're live, that's it. I have a favor to ask. A year ago, I saw your talk and it stuck with me. And one of the things that you did, which I thought would be a really useful way to kind of start this conversation, is you asked the audience a few questions about factors in their life and what effect that may have on their longevity. And I was wondering if you could do that here, because I think it's a really good way to introduce your work.
Yeah, so what I did, I thought it'd be fun with all these, you know, top finance people and bankers and government to actually calculate how long each and every one of them are going to live. And I use the questions that most strongly predict life expectancy at middle age. And the questions are, how many servings of fruits and vegetables? Do you eat at least 3 servings of fruits and vegetable every day? Raise your hand if you walk at least 45 minutes a day or move some other way. Raise your hand if you sleep at least 7.5 hours a day. Raise your hand if you have not had unprotected sex with a stranger. That always befuddles audiences, and they look around and then I catch them not raising their hand, and they're all red. Raise your hand if you have 3 good friends you can count on a bad day. That's the measure of loneliness. Raise your hand if you belong to a faith. Religious people live longer than non-religious people, but you have to show up, church, temple, or mosque. Yeah. It doesn't matter. And then raise your hand if you haven't smoked in the last 5 years. And since we're in California, I always clarify that it's tobacco.
Yeah.
And then raise your hand if you believe you have the health and the desire to reach age 90. Because a lot of people don't want to live a long time, and those people typically don't. These are all predictors, and based on how many times you raise your hand, I can get a pretty good idea of how long you're going to live. And right now, the maximum average life expectancy of people living in the first world, whether it's England or United States, is about 93. If somebody tells you they're going to help you live to 100 with some genetic or hormonal or supplement, you can be pretty sure they have their hand in your pocket wanting to fleece you. Given the rate of science right now, or the level of science and the level of healthcare, if you do everything right, from now to the rest of your life, the average person will hit about 93. Women will do a little better. Men will do a little worse.
And that's just assuming a kind of continued improvements in healthcare, technology, et cetera.
Yeah.
Or is that just – so for example, those questions you asked, I'm not going to say yes to all of those because I can't. But say I say yes to, I don't know, 3. Does that mean I'm going to live till stumbling 65?
I'm looking at you. You're thin, you're fit, you're smart. You live in, you know, a healthy city. San Francisco. You know, if you answered the three of those, your life expectancy would probably be around 80.
Okay.
And if you answered seven of them, you probably get an extra 10 years from that. And that's significant. Remember, the type you usually cover these sort of high-tech interventions that is going to lift the ceiling, potentially.
Correct.
Aubrey de Grey, I'm sure you've talked to him.
He's been on the podcast.
Yes, a very smart guy. My brand of longevity is how to avoid the things that foreshorten your life. So the value proposition, you know, for the average person living in London, they could live an extra 13 years if they optimize. That'd be the average.
Yeah.
So that's how I'm trying to help people get those years. And by the way, if they're getting those years, the older you get, the healthier you've been. So people who are making it to that healthy age 90 as a whole have better years. They have more health than the cohort dying in the 60s.
Health span.
Yes.
Health span as opposed to lifespan.
Right.
Right.
So another way to put it, you've probably heard the term morbidity. Morbidity are the bad years at the end of our lives. If you're in the cohort of people reaching age 90, your morbidity period is somewhere between 1 and 2 years. If you're in the cohort of people dying at 60, your morbidity is probably more like 7 or 8 years. So when people say, I don't want to live to 95, well, actually you do. And the reason you do is because you would have been biologically younger at every decade, and you would have been feeling better and more fit and more active and probably happier. If you're happy, if you're in the top quintile of the happiest people, that adds 8 years to your life expectancy.
See, that's what's really interesting also, because you often see these cases where, you know, a couple's been together forever. One dies, and the other one, who is otherwise totally healthy, they just expire quickly. And I don't know if that has to do with just all of a sudden happiness goes away or depression takes over, what physiological knock-on effects there are, but clearly there's something happening there.
Yeah, I'm surprised you know that. So if you've been married more than 40 years and one spouse dies, the life expectancy of the remaining spouse is about 14 months. So the thing is, as couples, we grow together. And you develop this symbiosis of, you know, you survive together and you thrive together. And when you remove half of that equation, the other half doesn't do so well. And it may be just because of the stress of grief, too. The death of a spouse takes about 7 years to get over. And when you're 85, you don't have 7 years.
Yeah.
So it's going to foreshorten your
life. So
marry a younger person. That's the takeaway.
I've done that. Score. So can we talk about what are blue zones, or what is your research and what is it based on? Are we getting these conclusions?
So it began with a grant from the National Institutes on Aging in the United States and
many moons ago.
Yes, 15 years ago, and an assignment from National Geographic. And we proactively struck out to identify parts of the world where people live statistically longest. So this is verified. This isn't hearsay.
Yeah.
It's math.
And communities that just seem to have a lot of people who live a long time.
They're geographically defined populations.
Right.
So the longest lived women in the world are in Okinawa, Japan, or were, that's disappearing. The longest lived men in the world are the highlands of Sardinia, the Noro province. An island of Ikaria, Greece, you find a population living about 8 years longer with about half the rate of cardiovascular disease and about one-tenth the rate of dementia you would expect to see in Great Britain. That's amazing. And by the way...
Well, especially if it's Ikaria, because a very, very dear friend of mine is Greek, and he actually has a particular affinity to that island. So
that's rare.
Yeah.
It's one of these third-tier islands that most people have never even heard of. But part of the reason they live long is because nobody heard about them. So they've been left alone to incubate this this lifestyle of longevity and haven't been polluted by the American diet yet. And this, I would say, obsession with comfort and convenience that is driving down life expectancy and elsewhere in the world. Nicoya, Costa Rica, this is an interesting place. Central America was very much third world up until about the 1980s. They have the lowest rate of middle-age mortality in the world. In other words, a guy your age has the best chance of reaching a healthy age, 93, and they do so spending about 1/15th the amount an American's average American spends on healthcare. So this whole myth that you have to be rich to be healthy and live a long time is completely debunked there. And then in the United States, it's among the Seventh-day Adventist. And
Where is that?
They're mostly concentrated in Loma Linda, California, but you see them in Walla Walla. They're about 25 million people. They're conservative Methodists who celebrate their Sabbath on Saturday. And, you know, the other blue zones are kind of geographically isolated. Adventists tend to be a little bit culturally isolated insofar that, you know, because of their Sabbath and certain other beliefs, they tend to hang out with each other.
Yeah.
And perpetuate. But I borrowed the term from my good pal Gianni Pess, who he's the guy who identified the blue zone in Sardinia, and I borrowed it and made it a worldwide term.
Right.
And it's really, it's a concept, it's a trademark. Now we got all these charlatans, like cosmetic companies, trying to use it.
Oh, in the longevity world, there is no shortage of charlatans.
Yeah.
A lot of snake oil.
So I'm trying really hard to keep it scientifically grounded. So here, the bottom line, right in the middle here, people tend to wait. Here's the secret to longevity. None of these places where people are making it to 100, did they ever get on a diet? They never joined a gym or bought an elliptical or called a toll-free number and bought supplements. The way we get it wrong in this country is we pursue health. And that never works. It occasionally works for the short run, but it fails for almost all the people all the time in the long run. When it comes to longevity, you have to do the right thing and avoid the wrong thing for decades, not just this year. So what does work? Shaping your environment so the healthy choice is the easy choice. So fruits, vegetables, and beans, nuts are cheapest and most accessible. There's recipes to make them taste good. So that every time you leave your house and you know, Europe is way ahead of America in this sense. You can walk to your kids can walk to school, to grocery store, to go out to eat, to see your friends. So you're not driving everywhere.
Well, it's funny. We just moved from San Francisco to Oakland because we had a second kid. So that's why I'm not getting my 7.5 hours of sleep right now. but also we moved to a suburban area. And initially I was like, it has to be walkable. It has to be walkable. And we couldn't afford it. But longer term, I was like, we have to get, because I lived in London, and before that, Barcelona, before that, Seville. I never used a car, ever.
Yeah.
I was just walking everywhere, and it was fantastic.
You don't have to worry about your weight when you're walking everywhere.
Exactly. Even and so now I'm a car-based, and it sucks.
It really does. I wrote another cover story for National Geographic since I've seen you last on the world's statistically happiest places. And to a T, the happiest places are the most walkable. Copenhagen, Denmark, Singapore, Boulder, Colorado. We evolved interacting with other humans. It's very hard to do that when you live out in a suburb and you drive, you get in your walk from your garage to your car to work, etc. Cars stress us out. They follow the air. They cause accidents. And the really enlightened cities in the world are proactively designing their streets for human beings. They don't forget about the car, but the car is kind of an afterthought rather than the human being the afterthought.
And so when you found these blue zones, how long were people living in these places? And was it the question you asked at the beginning, presumably those are the common themes that emerged when you went to all these different places?
Right, yes. That was my charge, to identify the common denominators. There was 9 of them. I write about it extensively in Blue Zones. And then Blue Zone Solution suggests, okay, here's what the longest lived people do. Blue Zone Solution is how to actually do it. I make the argument you want to shape your environment, shape your ecosystem so it's mindless.
Right.
If I give you a program that you have to remember or have to have discipline, you'll do it for a few months and then you'll be bored and there'll be some new program that you hear about and you'll drop it. But when you shape the environment the right way, that can last for decades. Mostly we're looking for places with low rates of the diseases that are killing us. So what's killing most? 70% of all of the people on Earth will die of a chronic disease. That means a heart attack, a stroke, diabetes, some form of usually avoidable cancer or dementia. That's how we're, 100 years ago, we were dying of infectious disease.
Yeah.
Malaria, dysentery, you know, stepping on a nail and getting gangrene. We don't have to worry about those anymore for the most part. It's the chronic diseases. And these places are avoiding the chronic disease. So I tried to answer, what are these places doing to avoid those chronic disease and thereby live out the capacity of the human machine, i.e. 93?
Right. And there's no genetic underpinning there to these communities?
No. So genes, and this number's driven down since when I started, the general consensus was genes explained about 20 to 25%. Now it's as little as 15%. So in other words, if your parents died young, you're not necessarily going to die young. 10% or so is the quality of your health care. But a full 75% is your lifestyle and environment. Those are far and away the biggest drivers. Now, let me clarify that. When I say 15% is genes, you think of it as a spectrum. At one end of the spectrum, you have these people who run marathons and eat bean sprouts.
Yeah.
And boom, they drop dead at 50 of colon, of some weird cancer.
That is the classic argument of my friends who don't like, I don't like to run, but I try to stay in shape. But like, Jim Fix. Well, look at that guy. He dropped dead running a marathon.
50. and then at the other end of the spectrum, you got these guys who are 100 years old and smoked two packs of cigarettes and drank whiskey all day. So they're both outliers. They're both three or four standard deviations from the norm. But the 2 to 3 standard deviations of the norm, they're making it to, you know, mid-90s. With the set of genes, the hand they were dealt. So I speak to, you know, I speak to the mean and the standard deviation or two from the mean.
Right. When did the book first come out, Blue Zones book?
I've written three of them now. Blue Zones, Lessons from the World's Longest Lived People, that came out in 2008. And then I wrote Blue Zone Solution in 2013, which is how to put it to work. And then 2 years ago, 2017, I wrote The Blue Zones of Happiness, which took a similarly statistical approach at how to stack the deck in favor of happiness.
And that happiness has a physiological implication. How do you measure that? And, you know, how do you connect those dots?
So about 80% of the behaviors that will get you to age... healthy age 90 or so will make the journey pleasant. So socially interacting, having a faith, a belief, eating healthy food so you feel good. But another way to look at it, if you're in the top 20% who report high happiness, so if you're the happiest 20%, happiest quintile, your life expectancy is 8 years longer than the lowest quintile. So working to be happy is also working to live longer. They're inextricably linked to each other.
And do we know how that, what the mechanism that makes, that connects, I am a happy person, therefore my machine, my body is in better shape or lasts longer?
So unhappy people are more likely to be stressed, which triggers the inflammatory response, and inflammation is at the root of every age-related disease. Unhappy people are more likely to be depressed, more likely to commit suicide. Unhappy people are less likely to be socially connected and receive support from a social network. Unhappy people are less likely to stay fit. And then there's may just be a psychosomatic element to it as well.
Right.
Similarly, to the other side of the correlational equation is, we know that people who eat 7 servings of fruits and vegetables are 20% more likely to be happy. Well, I don't know why. You just might feel better if you're not bogged down by
7 servings a day.
Yeah, fruits and vegetables. That's what we should be eating, by the way. And that's what they do.
Does that
Blue
mean, but how can you eat anything else, or is that the whole point?
Well, I mean, breakfast, lunch, and dinner, you typically have at least 3 or 4 servings of things. I mean, you have 3 servings on your plate, and you'll have a fruit or something like that.
Right.
So that gives you 12 servings, and 7 of them need to be fruits and vegetables. It's not that hard. But we don't think that way. You know, increasingly, meat has crept into our diet. If you're eating meat more than twice a day, your chances of heart disease and diabetes both about triple. So fruits and vegetables are, you know, what your grandma told you was right. for not only longevity or happiness.
And sleep. Sleep is the other thing, which I find interesting, because it does feel like people like Arianna Huffington and others, there's a sleep industry that has kind of feels like it's come out of nowhere.
She stays awake late to write about sleep. So sleep is another one of those. There are some people who are genetically predisposed to be awake, and they're fine.
Yeah.
You know, Winston Churchill, famously. Okay, average person, you should be shooting for 7.5 to 9 hours. That's optimal. And we know among centenarians, they're sleeping about 8, sometimes in 2 phases, and napping too, by the way. So the average American, I'm pretty sure it'd be the same in Great Britain. You'd have about 6 to 6.25 hours. You know,
yeah.
And by the way, it's bad math, because we think, okay, I'm gonna work extra late, and mm-hmm. I'm gonna stuff all this activity in my day and just sleep 6 hours. But people who are depriving themselves from sleep have shorter life expectancies. So if you look at your life as a whole, it is really good math. It's a good bet. Come hell or high water, I'm sleeping my 7.5 to 9 hours.
Right.
You're going to function better. You're less likely to get a cold or other diseases, and you're more likely to live longer. It's probably 3 or 4 extra years of life expectancy if you live your life well rested than, you know, sleep deprived, like
right.
most people in the Western world.
Small details are big surfaces. Tight corners are odd shapes. Flat, rounded, textured, or tall. Whatever your next project, there's a spray paint pattern that's just right. Because Rust-Oleum's new Custom Spray 5-in-1 gives you control with 5 different spray patterns. So you can tackle nooks, crannies, edges, and curves without worrying about drips, runs, uneven coverage, or anything else. Custom Spray 5-in-1. Only from Rust-Oleum.
A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
Rebag, your premier destination for luxury resale. Elevate your style with our curated collection of bags, watches, and fine jewelry. At Rebag, quality is our priority. Each piece meticulously vetted and verified by experts, ensuring your investment is nothing short of perfection. Buy and sell finds from the world's top brands, including Hermes, Chanel, and Cartier. Access expertly crafted and hard-to-find pieces that redefine luxury. Your next investment awaits at Rebag. Get 10% off your first purchase with code REBAG10. That's 10% off the luxury you deserve. Don't miss out. Head to Rebag.com and enter code REBAG10 at checkout. That's REBAG10.
And so do you walk around looking at this world in which we live and just like, what? How did we get here? Because it feels like those questions you ask, I mean, most people would say no to, I don't know, half of that.
I have a couple thoughts on that. First of all, both of our countries, until about 1960, there weren't enough calories. You know, fighting the Cold War, World War II, we don't remember this, but people struggled. There was rations. So we depended on private enterprise to provide enough calories, and we've done a really good job. The problem is we've done too good of a job. We're awashing calories, and that's partly policy, you know, grain and soybeans and raising meat, and
yeah.
It's too many cheap calories around. So there's no bad guy, there's no villain here. Also, you hear a lot of talk about individual responsibility. Imagine my finger waving yeah. and wagging at you right now. It's your responsibility to be healthy. Actually, I don't believe that. If I see an overweight American, it's probably not his or her fault. Because 1980, there were a third as many obese people then as there are now.
A third.
Now, is that because 1980 there were better diet plans or better gyms or people had more responsibility back then? No. Our environment has changed, and we live in a place where almost every choice is a bad choice that are presented us when it comes to food. You really got to work hard to find a healthy plant-based lunch. You go to shopping.
Very hard. Very hard.
Yeah.
Yes.
And when you find it, it tastes like crap, so you're not going to eat that anyway. So what we have to do, I think, is systematically look at recognizing the problem, not continue to whitewash it and continue to blame, you know, poor people.
Yeah.
For not having discipline, and quit putting our faith in diet and exercise programs, both unmitigated failures, at least when it comes to public health, and shape our environment so that it's easier for people to make the right choices. Right now, it's very hard, if not impossible.
Yeah, you have to go out of your way.
I mean, you can't walk to work. You get there at 3 in the afternoon, and you'd be tired.
And I'd have to cross the Bay Bridge, which would be a bit treacherous.
Yeah, but if you lived in downtown London, which I'll be, by the way, I'll be there in mid-May. I don't know when this is, but if I'm there in mid-May, I want to meet everybody listening to this right now.
Yeah, exactly.
In person, I'll be at the pub. What's a good pub to meet everybody at?
Oh, there's lots. I mean, it depends on where you're staying.
Just pick one. I'll go there. I'll meet everybody.
The Queen's Head.
Queen's Head.
On Essex Road in Islington.
On Essex Road in Islington. I'll see you the night of May 19th at about 7 o'clock.
You'll be there by the bar.
Yes, yes. And the first three people I meet, I'll buy a beer.
There you go.
Yeah, so that's insane.
That's pretty good. Well, to that point around creating an environment that is healthier, presumably this move, this mass urbanization movement, this mass move of people from the countryside to cities, whether it's here, China, wherever, generally around the world, that's got to be a good thing, no? Broadly speaking, for what you're talking about.
I think so. So I'm here at the Milken Institute Now conference to talk about designing cities. That's my main job these days. And I was with the mayor of Helsinki. When it comes to longevity or happiness, where you live is the biggest driver of how long you're going to live and how happy you'll be. I could go into it deeper if you want to, but that's the headline, where you live. You take a place, Kentucky, for example. Mm-hmm. Good Americans live in Kentucky. Yep. They say the Pledge of Allegiance, and they believe in freedom, and they have access to the same food. Their life expectancy is 20 years less than the life expectancy of people living in Colorado. It's a perfect example. When you take unhappy people living in places like Africa and Asia and Latin America and move them to Canada, which is a pretty happy place, within 1 year they report the happiness level of their adoptive home. Nothing else has changed. Their sex is the same. Their age is pretty much the same. Education,
their diet will have changed.
Sexual, the same. All they did was move. So moving from rural areas into cities, it very much depends what city you move into. If you move into a city in Kentucky or West Virginia, your happiness and longevity is likely to plummet. If you move to Boulder, Colorado, or San Luis Obispo, or Portland, Oregon, or Minneapolis, Minnesota, your happiness and longevity is likely to rise.
Yeah.
Because your decisions are subconsciously engineered to be better in those places.
Because it's easier to walk around, it's easier to find healthy food, it's easier to kind of live this more natural kind of human existence.
Correct. And the social circle you're going to fall into is probably healthier people whose idea of recreation is biking or playing tennis as opposed to, you know, sitting around with the good old boys and drinking beer and eating fried pork skin.
Yeah. But it is interesting because if your job, if what you're concerned with is this kind of designing cities and getting people to live this type of life, it does feel like you are pushing water uphill a little bit. I mean, I know that people are generally moving towards cities, but we have, especially in America, most people seem to live a carb-based existence and eat an American diet.
Here's the way I guarantee we'll see America continue to devolve, is keep doing nothing and saying there's no hope. So what my team does, I have 200 employees who work in 26 American cities. And in each of those cities, I have three teams. One team works with policies. We've aggregated policies that favor fruits and vegetables over junk food.
Yeah.
For example, I'll give you the most salient example. If you live in a neighborhood where there are more than 6 fast food restaurants within a half a kilometer of your home, you're 40% more likely to be obese. Similarly, if you live in a neighborhood where there are billboards that advertise junk food.
So kind of food deserts.
Yeah, not even food desert, just being advertised junk.
Right. Yeah.
So cities can decide ordinance. No more billboards in this poor part of town reminding people to go out and get a hamburger and a Coke. Ordinance, no more than 3 fast food restaurants within a half mile radius of any given place. So there are things that city, very proactive, and you can't tell a city what to do.
Yeah.
but you can give them policies that have worked elsewhere. And you take Mayor Betsy Price in Fort Worth, Texas. I've worked with her for the past 5 years, and we've seen the obesity rate drop in Fort Worth. It goes up everyplace else in Texas. It's gone down in Fort Worth.
What have they done there?
It's not a silver bullet, it's silver buckshot. We had a full-time staff, 35 people, who helped them implement policies that favored healthier food, that favored the pedestrian over the automobile, favored the non-smoker over the smoker. We have a Blue Zone certification for restaurants, grocery stores, workplaces, schools, and churches. We got about 25% of all those places. So when you go into a Blue Zone restaurant, there's at least one plant-based option. When you sit down to your meal, you don't automatically get served bread and butter. You got to ask for it. In America, it happens all the time.
Oh, I know. America, it's just...
Yeah, they
it was really funny. Many years ago, I had a Spanish girlfriend, and I brought her to America. And we went out to a restaurant, and she ordered a salad. And they brought this just kind of bucket of salad. She was just like, oh my God, what is this? She was just like, she just couldn't believe that this was like the standard. But it was really funny, especially coming from Spain, which is obviously, they have a lot of meat, but it's Mediterranean diet too. So it's...
Yeah.
Just, I'd love to get a sense of how you ended up doing this. What was your kind of pathway to becoming, to writing the book and then starting this company? Because if I'm correct, you hold some Guinness World Records.
Yeah, when you were doing useful and productive things as a young man writing, I set a record for biking from Alaska to Argentina, biking around the world, and biking across Africa, which meant across the Sahara and across the Congo.
How'd you do that? What kind of bike can make it through the Sahara?
We customized our own bikes. Well, we had Cannondale, but they customized them for us.
It's like fat tires.
Yeah, that's right. You let out almost all the air. We had GPSs and CIA maps to help us navigate our way through. And our bikes had about a 35-liter capacity of water. So
this just sounds to like a horrendous experience. I mean, I'm sure it was.
Yeah. You know, oddly, at first it's really, really horrendous, but then you sort of adapt to it.
Yeah.
And it becomes austerely beautiful. People think of the Sahara as big sand dunes, but actually 4/5 of the Sahara looks like a giant parking lot.
Yeah.
So that you can bike across pretty easily.
So you're kind of doing extreme kind of adventuring.
Yeah, so exploration, but always driven by curiosity. And then I started a company in the late 90s, that exploration company that led an online audience, direct a team of experts to solve mysteries. And we called them quests. It harnessed the wisdom of the crowds. It turns out there's lots of dispersed expertise. You know, retired professors and the ingenuity of young kids. And it worked fantastically well. And I didn't make any, until I was 40, I didn't make any money. All of a sudden, I was a multimillionaire. But I sold this company.
Right.
But along the way, I learned how to, A, read academic papers, and B, network to the top people in any field. And I developed a skill for synthesizing lots of information. This idea to pursue longevity kind of followed that, this idea of, in a way, reverse engineering a mystery and systematically going at an answer.
Right.
Summing it up. So I wrote the Blue Zones, and it became a big New York Times bestseller. I really believed in it. I knew that 3 months later there'd be some new health book that would push Blue Zones off the shelf.
Yeah.
I said, I want to prove this works. And I got a grant from AARP. It's a U.S.
Yep.
And
big that's Biggest Association of Retired Persons.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They actually gave me the money, about $1 million, to manufacture a Blue Zone. So take these ideas, this blueprint that I distilled from all these five areas, and apply it to American City. And it took about 2 years. And again, the approach was not change behavior, change environment. Permanent,
right.
Semi-permanent changes in the environment. Silver buckshot, 70 or 80 of these. Lo and behold, life expectancy went up by 3 years.
Where?
And this is Albert Lea, Minnesota. It's well documented. And healthcare costs dropped by 40%, as reported
because
by
Because you basically put the system in place in this place in Minnesota. That's
right. So we made it more walkable, more bikeable. We got most restaurants Blue Zone certified. They changed their policies to favor fruits and vegetables. We gave everybody purpose workshops like you see in Blue Zones and got most of the population volunteering. Winston Churchill famously said, if you shape buildings, they will shape you. Mm-hmm. And it's the same thing with our cities. If you optimize your cities for health, you're going to become healthy. You start with the environment, but the culture soon follows. And to this date, just last month they passed a ordinance prohibiting vaping in kids under 21. And they cited Blue Zones.
Right.
So people are knocking down the door to get at us.
That's amazing.
Yeah. So it got huge national news here, mainly because people kind of want health, but what they really want is better economics, at least at the city level.
Yeah, yeah.
So when the city reported a 40% drop in healthcare costs, it blew up. We were in big national news. And then all of a sudden my phone was ringing up. Oh, can you do it to my city? Can you do it to my city? And I go, figure, okay. And I got professional about it. And I teamed up with another operations company. And now we've done it to over 40 cities and places as big as Fort Worth, Texas. And
right.
The whole island of Maui, which is a very tough place to go.
Wow.
Most of the island of Hawaii, the big island of Hawaii, Naples, Florida.
Because it does feel like we're kind of at a decline and fall type moment when you even talk about obesity. I don't know if there's ever been a point in human history where so many people have literally been eating themselves to death.
Never. More people will die of overnutrition than undernutrition in this world.
When you stop and think about it, it just feels crazy.
Yeah, but you know, if you walk around, the Milken Institute is very good, and Davos World Economic Forum. Well, Mike Milken himself said it's our food system. It's going to be the most important economic issue in the next decade. So when you get these sort of thought leaders shifting their focus away from, you know, increasing capacity, manufacturing capacity, or technology, which has been the buzz for the last decade. This place is buzzing with the food system. The world's food system will kill 11 million people in the world this year. Just the bad food system.
Just like contaminated foods and stuff.
It's more what you said before, people prematurely dying of chronic disease and draining. In America, we spend about $3.7 trillion, 18% of our GDP, on largely avoidable diseases. 85% of all chronic diseases are avoidable.
Yeah.
And they're the result of a crappy environment. So the prize here is enormous. Mm-hmm. And where there's a lot of money at stake, you can get a lot of sharp people and will unleashed on it. That was a very long-winded way of saying, I think it's going to get better.
Right. And I have two more questions, and I promise I'll let you go. One is on around, there's a lot of companies around doing stuff around the biome, the microbiome. They send you a test. You send them a little dab of your poop. They analyze it and say, these are the foods that you need to eat for your own body because some are react poorly with your system, et cetera, et cetera. But this whole idea of food is medicine movement, and it feels like there's a fair amount of snake oilery in there, but it feels like there's also some principle in there.
Yeah. Yeah, that's a little snake oily, but they're right. You know, our microbiome, those 40 trillion cells at the end of our GI tract, drives our health more than just about any other organ, believe it or not. It weighs about 3 kilos. The only thing that microbiome eats, or mostly, it eats fiber. And most of our diet here in America, in your diet, you know, chips and fish and what do you call them, yammers and peas or whatever?
Bangers and mash.
Bangers and peas.
Bangers and mash. Bangers and mash. I'll give you a cheat sheet before you go.
Yeah. So fat is metabolized in your stomach and sugar metabolized in upper intestine. None of that fuels the microbiome. And it's microbiome. It's that bacteria that governs our immune system, governs the inflammation in our body, drives our mood, drives the hormones that makes us feel hungry. It's been vastly under-celebrated. So I'll save you the money at sending in to find out what the optimal diet is. Just eat beans. The world all of a sudden started eating a cup of beans a day, which is wholly sustainable, we would probably erase 50% of the obesity epidemic. Because if you're eating beans, you're getting enough protein, you don't have to eat the meat. It'd be pushing out more, first of all, you'd be fueling your microbiome.
Yeah.
You'd be getting protein, you'd be getting the trace minerals, but you'd also push out unconsciously because you don't need it, the more unhealthy proteins like pork and beef and bacon. Yeah. And
so beans, sleep, and friends.
There you go. That sounds like a party to me.
Do you have one moment from your round the world biking? Do you have like a great story, anecdote? You must have been through some crazy things. Is there one story that sticks out?
I'll tell you one from Africa. So crossing the Sahara Desert one night, we just laid our tarp down and we're just going to go sleep. And we noticed this hut with a light on, and we walked there. We opened the door, and it was this one place in the Sahara where if you show up, they'll feed you. And it looked like something out of Star Wars. It was dark, kerosene lit. They were all in jalabas. The women all in veils sit down around this vast paella pan. So it looks like the size of a table, eating this couscous. And it was basically all grain, but in the middle, there was one glistening piece of mutton. And everybody is ravenously hungry. And the women sit down, and they eat from the rim towards the middle. And then we sit down. You know, it's like a bunch of Star Wars character and my brother and I in Lycra. And we're all ravenously hungry. We're all eating towards that one piece of meat. And we got to that one piece of meat in the middle. It's this glistening, just calling your
beautiful.
Name.
Beautiful, yeah.
And we all looked at each other, stood up and walked out, and that little piece of meat stood there. I don't know. For some reason, that story sticks in my mind.
Yeah, in Spain, they said that there's always like the one piece of, there's one last bite that like, da vergüenza, exactly.
Yeah.
It's like no one wants to eat the last bite and be the person who eats the last thing on the plate.
So that's true with mutton in the Sahara.
And that is all the time we have. I want to thank Dan. I also want to thank Jeff Perry for taking the time to talk to me on the streets of San Francisco about Uber and his experience there. And yeah, for those who are listening, Dan Buettner, he was serious. The old Queen's Head on Essex Road. Later this month, show up. He'll buy you a beer. You can figure out what you need to do to live into your 90s without ever having to go to the gym. So what's not to like about that? So that is it for this week. I hope you enjoyed it. Thank you for tuning in. Please take a moment, give a rating and review. It really does help. So please take a moment to do that. And I will be writing about video games this weekend in the newspaper. So you want to tune into that. It's actually kind of interesting. So I'll be in the Sunday Times or online at thetimes.co.uk or on the Twitters at Danny Fortson. So that is it. I will leave you. Have a fantastic weekend, and we will talk to you next week. Bye-bye.
Small details are big surfaces. Tight corners are odd shapes. Flat, rounded, textured, or tall. Whatever your next project, there's a spray paint pattern that's just right, because Rust-Oleum's new Custom Spray 5-in-1 gives you control with 5 different spray patterns, so you can tackle nooks, crannies, edges, and curves without worrying about drips, runs, uneven coverage, or anything else. Custom Spray 5-in-1, only from Rust-Oleum.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.